Today on Maine Calling, the political pulse team on Maine's election results. Votes are still being counted, and the race for Maine's 2nd Congressional District remains razor thin. Congressman Jared Golden has declared victory, but his challenger, Austin Terrio, has not conceded and will likely ask for a recount. As for Maine's new legislature, we still don't have the final results for every race, but it appears that the Democrats will hold on to both the House and Senate chambers in Augusta. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, our political pulse team joins us to talk about state and local races and what they mean. We'll discuss question one, how the limits on PAC spending in Maine will work, the rejection of a new flag for the state, and broader trends revealed by voting results. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, our political pulse team will join us to discuss Maine's election results and their impact. An important note, though, President Biden is scheduled to address the nation at some point very soon, so we will go to that address when he begins. Joining us on the line now, Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows. Secretary of State Bellows, thank you so much for calling in again.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
The AP is estimating that with 93% of the votes cast, Jared Golden is leading Austin Terrio in the 2nd District by less than one percentage point, a difference of less than 2,500 votes. I understand that if Golden's count slips under 50% plus one vote, it would trigger the ranked choice instant runoff. But what about a recount? When the margin is that slim, is there an automatic recount or does Terrio need to ask for one? And how would that work?
Maine doesn't have automatic recounts, but any candidate can ask for a recount. And certainly, I would imagine that should Terrio be under that 50%, which it looks like, according to unofficial results, that Golden has prevailed, that they would ask for a recount.
All right.
How that works is we retrieve all of the ballots from all of the towns utilizing law enforcement. Those are delivered to Augusta. It's a hand recount, with representatives from each campaign actually handling the ballots under the supervision of the Elections Division civil service staff who are in charge of the recount itself.
So if a recount were to happen, it would take a while.
Yes, certainly. It would be happening sometime next week.
All right. What about Maine's legislative races? Do any of those seem headed for a recount?
I think we're definitely going to see multiple legislative recounts. Again, the candidates have to request it, but we saw some unofficially very narrow margins.
All right. Well, before we let you go, I want to get some clarification about the Maine state flag. Voters rejected the idea of changing the flag, but individuals and businesses can still fly that pine tree flag if they want, correct?
Absolutely. We have a couple of Maine flag companies, one in Skowhegan, one in Portland. They do great business. People should absolutely continue to fly the pine tree flag if they so choose. I think it's all over merchandise across the state. So we do have the official, you know, traditional Maine state flag with a state seal that will continue to fly over governmental buildings, but private citizens can fly whatever they want.
Well, Secretary of State Shenna Bellows, thank you again for your time. Turning now to our political pulse team, Kevin, Jared Golden, as we just mentioned, has declared victory, but boy, was that a close race. Why do you think it was so close?
Yeah, it certainly is close. I think that, you know, starting off, Austin Terrio was a pretty strong candidate. He came in with a certain amount of name recognition because of his roots in NASCAR. And he's a local Aroostook County native, had a lot of support up there. So I think that's one factor. The other factor, of course, is this was a presidential election. We saw really high turnout. Donald Trump once again won the 2nd District. So I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more. And then some of the issues that obviously were resonating with voters, the economy, obviously on the national scale that had a big impact on the presidential election and a lot of the other elections. The Terrio campaign really tried to tie Golden to the economy and to the Biden agenda. They may have had some success there, but at the same time, you have an incumbent who has a lot of name recognition. He's won three elections. This is now the fourth election he's won in the second district. So I think there are pluses and minuses on both sides for both campaigns.
And Kevin, what about the other congressional races? Both incumbents, Senator Angus King and First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, won easily. Anything to note about those races?
Yeah, I think there's no big surprises in either of those races. Congresswoman Pingree she's consistently won her reelections with anywhere from 53 to 63% of the vote. And this time around, she was kind of right in the middle there. Angus King is an independent, caucuses with the Democrats. He's always been popular with Democratic voters. There was a Democrat who was running this time, but he wasn't able to make that argument to Democratic voters that he was going to be a better fit for Maine. So I think, you know, no surprises in either case. It was a little closer, I'm sure, in Angus's King's case than maybe he would have preferred, but it really wasn't close. It was still about a 20-point margin, I believe.
All right. Steve, let's talk about the Maine legislature. Every 2 years, every single state in both houses is open. So in theory, anything could happen, but it does appear the Democrats will hold on to both houses. That's correct, right? And how close do the numbers seem to be?
Well, they'll be really close, Jen. And it does appear like Democrats will be able to hold both chambers, which is pretty remarkable given this red wave that we're seeing all across the country. So for context, excuse me, GOP or Republicans held 57 legislative chambers nationwide prior to Election Day. And it looks like they're going to make some additional inroads, either breaking up Democratic trifectas, which is what Maine currently has with Governor Janet Mills in the governor's office. And then, of course, with Democrats controlling both chambers of the Maine legislature. So if Democrats here are able to hold both chambers, that would be pretty remarkable. You know, I say that knowing that there will be recounts, but those recounts, you know, they sometimes will flip a result, but it's pretty rare. But the numbers right now look like this. There are 77 Democrats who appear to have secured seats in the Maine House compared to 74 Republicans. So they have a 3-seat advantage as of right now. And there are also 2 independents. So that sometimes caucus or vote with Democrats. Over in the Senate, the Democrats appear to have retained a 20-15 advantage there. They lost 2 seats, though, and the Republicans picked up 3. So it currently is 22-12, but Republicans have successfully flipped a couple of seats, including one in the Aroostook County, which is currently held by Senator Troy Jackson, but he was termed out and did not seek reelection.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more. Senator Jackson from Allegash, Senate President, replaced by a Republican, Sue Bernard. Many people who are reporters know Sue Bernard from her time in Southern Maine when she was spokesperson for the Catholic Diocese in Maine, but she grew up in the county and has since moved back. How significant is it that Troy Jackson's seat will be replaced by a Republican?
It's interesting because I think, you know, I've heard from a lot of people many times that Troy Jackson might be the only Democrat who can actually hold that seat. He's just sort of a unique politician for a unique part, a unique district. So it's not terribly surprising that Sue Bernard, who was a very good candidate when she tried to beat Troy Jackson 2 years ago and was unsuccessful. So it's not surprising that she won this time against a candidate who didn't have the same sort of name recognition or maybe even the cachet that Troy Jackson has in that district. But it is, I think, significant that there are no Democrats holding legislative seats in Aroostook County because John Martin, who the longtime Maine House Speaker, who has come in and out of the legislature over the years as term limits come and go, he tried to come back this year and he was unsuccessful. He was trying to get Austin Terrio's seat. Austin Terrio is currently a state representative. And it looks like John Martin is not going to have been, he's not going to have been successful in that bid. So there's no Democrats in Aroostook County that are holding legislative seats right now. And I think that in and of itself is pretty significant.
Well, it seems as though we're talking about Aroostook County, Steve, but Kevin, I'll turn to you to talk about Cumberland County, which is where Portland is. Yesterday on Maine Calling, political science scientist Nick Jacobs of Colby College said something that I just keep thinking about. He said that nationwide in this election, most heavily Democratic urban areas, most cities, shifted to being less Democratic, less blue, with only a tiny fraction of exceptions. However, one of those exceptions was Cumberland County, Maine, that the Portland area is shifting even more Democratic. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on why Portland would be an exception like this.
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting tidbit. I think, you know, part of what's going on here is just that Portland has been shifting left, shifting more to the blue for years now. We've seen a lot of in-migration from elsewhere. And I think that's just a trend that's happening. It didn't really surprise me in this case because, I mean, look, during the pandemic, we saw a lot of people moving up to Maine, moving into the Portland area, moving all over the state, but definitely moving to the Portland area, coming from places like New York, Connecticut, you know, elsewhere along the East Coast that tend to lean blue. So it doesn't surprise me that we shifted. And if you look at the state overall, the returns for 2024 actually are pretty similar to what we saw in 2020. You know, Harris won about 52% of the vote statewide this year. Biden won 53% 4 years ago. Same thing. Trump was 45% this year. He was 44% 4 years ago. So there's definitely a shift. And, you know, certainly in southern Maine and coastal Maine, it continues to shift blue. And it's not necessarily surprising to me that we might be a little bit of an outlier compared to the national data in this case.
Steve, I think I just wanted to jump in on that. It's pure speculation on my part, but I do kind of wonder if one of the reasons that there's a shift in other blue areas, particularly urban areas, is because Trump was apparently successful in getting a higher vote share of minority voters in those more urban areas, so, you know, Latinos and Black Americans. So I think, you know, that might be part of the reason why the shift might be more pronounced there than it is here in Maine, which is still a predominantly white state.
We're talking with our Political Pulse team about the Maine election results. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you are welcome to do so. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. Of course, we are waiting for President Biden to speak, but we're going to try to get through as much interesting information as possible. Steve, I'm going to turn to you. Voters approved question one to cap election donations from political action committees or PACs. So how does that work now, and how will it affect future elections?
Well, that's a good question, because I think we're assuming that this law will actually get implemented. And I think that we might be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. And the reason why, Jen, is that this cap on donations is most likely going to get challenged legally, just because it may, and I think supporters of the law welcome that challenge, because they want this challenge to get into federal court and potentially the Supreme Court to hopefully set a new precedent in campaign contributions and capping them nationally. So, but let's set that aside for a second, because I might be getting too ahead of myself in that case. But what the law proposes to do is to cap donations to certain political action committees at $5,000. Right now, businesses or interest groups, there is no cap on donations. They can give as much money as they have or are willing to political action committees. Now, this cap, if it is implemented, would apply to PACs that spend independently of candidate campaigns. We often talk about these kind of PACs as outside groups, and those groups can spend unlimited amounts of money to oppose or support a particular legislative candidate. In this case, the cap would only apply to those types of political action committees. It would not apply to party committees or ballot question committees. So, you know, if there's a referendum on the ballot like this one, outside groups could still give unlimited amounts of money to support or oppose that under this, even if this law is implemented. There would be no cap on those contributions. I'll just add real quick that this is the second time in a year that Maine voters have sought some sort of limit on political action committees or ballot question committees. And I think that's a reflection of this ongoing but still unresolved backlash to the Citizens United Supreme Court ruling in 2010 that basically just unleashed this wave of election spending that has not subsided and only grown ever since.
All right. Well, I want to ask you, Kevin, about some local races. We did see some hot button issues in local races, housing, cruise ships. What did we learn from voters?
Yeah, so Bar Harbor had the issue of cruise ships has been a longstanding kind of debate up in Bar Harbor. And what we saw there was the voters rejected kind of loosening or relaxing the cap on the number of cruise ship passengers that can come. This has been just such a hot button issue for so many years now. Some businesses really favor allowing these cruise ship passengers come in. Other folks saying it's clogging the town, discouraging other tourism, and making kind of a major headache for people who live in town and try to work in town. On the housing issue, we saw an interesting referendum in Portland where Portland voters, they agreed to cap the short-term number of short-term rentals that we see in the city. So voters agreed to set it at 1.5% of the rental stock could be these short-term kind of Airbnb rentals. That would actually limit it to about 300 units, as I understand it. That would be different from about 400 units. They're not saying that if you have a short-term rental now, you're no longer going to be able to do it, but it's capping it going forward. So that was obviously a reaction to that. But on other housing, and this is part of the broader debate that we're seeing about housing availability and housing affordability and this concern that short-term rentals are really driving up the costs and limiting the number of affordable housing that's around the state.
Yeah. Steve, I'm wondering if you sensed any overall mood of voters, overall trends in Maine?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think, if you just take, if you assume that Maine is part of the country in the sense of the electorate sentiment, I think there seemed to be a big backlash against inflation, housing affordability, and there was a rejection in some cases of the Democratic agenda, and at least as they, at least as it was framed by President-elect Trump. So I think, that in and of itself, I think people in general are just sort of angry about the cost of groceries, fuel, whatever. I mean, even fuel, even though gas is pretty low right now, especially compared to what it was a year ago. But, that sort of anger, it reflected itself in the results. And of course, immigration is a hot button issue too. That's what the president was a centerpiece of his campaign. And he made a lot of promises about what he wants to do with that. And, apparently a lot of voters are supportive of those promises.
Kevin, what about you? What did you notice about Maine voters this time around?
Well, I think it's, once again, we're seeing the willingness of Maine voters to split tickets, to vote Democrat on one side, to vote Republican on another side. I mean, that's kind of what we've seen with in Congressional District 2. If Jared Golden does indeed hold on to his lead, which seems like he probably will. At the same time, again, Donald Trump won that district. And going back to what Steve was talking about earlier with legislative races, Republicans did make gains in the state legislature and the state house. That's clear. They did not make as many gains as we saw in other states, as Steve talked about. And I think that is, again, it's part of this willingness of Maine voters to vote to split the ticket and to then vote, I'm going to vote for Trump in the presidential race. But when it comes down to my state house, I either know this local Democrat or, he's a name that's familiar with me for me. I'm going to vote for him. So that always strikes me as interesting. I think we're not seeing as much split ticket happening around the country, but it's still pretty lively here in Maine.
Yeah, to Kevin's point, I think that's one of the reasons why this red wave, if you will, didn't completely wash over New England writ large. I think, I think New England states are, by and large, partisanship is not baked in all the way down to down ticket races. That's certainly true in Maine, where we've seen a lot of split ticket voting over the years, including in 2020, when President Biden and former President Trump were squaring off in a presidential election, and Biden won the state pretty handily, as well as Vice President Harris did this year. But Susan Collins, who was up in 2020 and is the Republican senator, won overwhelmingly in what was a pretty good year for Democrats. And I think that speaks to a lot of what Kevin is talking about here, that Maine voters continue to be split ticket voters, or a lot of them. And I think that is significant continue, because it does buck a trend nationwide. And nationwide, it's not does not look like that.
All right. One other thing, I'll
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just going to add, since we're talking about split ticket voters and kind of the voting demographics in Maine certainly have changed. Not that long ago, independent voters were the largest voting bloc here in Maine. That's shifted. So now Democrats are the largest voting bloc. Republicans are actually second, and then independents are third. What I'll be really curious to see what happens, because we always see shifts after presidential elections, to see what happens now. There's obviously a lot of frustration out there right now with the Democratic Party, I think, among some Democratic voters. I'll be curious to see whether they maybe end up losing some voters here in Maine, just because folks are unhappy with the nominees that they had on the ticket. So at least on the presidential level. So I think that'll be interesting to see whether that changes in the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's so interesting you say that, because it is only very recently that the non-affiliated voter ceased to be the number one voting bloc in Maine. And it was that way for a long time, wasn't it, Kevin?
Yeah, it was. And that was, I think, partly or largely a response to the controversies that we saw for so many years under Governor LePage. I think that drove some people more to register as Democrats. But then I think it was also a response to the first Trump presidency in 2016. That's when we really started to see a shift with more independents shifting towards the Democratic Party.
Plus the immigration of people from blue areas that Kevin referenced earlier too. I think that's also part of this.
I'm going to go to an email from Jim. He wrote, I just heard your suggestion to explain the shift from 2020 to 24. It might be an ethnic shift to Trump, but it seems more likely some success of the Trump focus on males. Steve, do we have enough research to say whether or not what we're seeing nationally, this gender divide, is also relevant here in Maine?
Unclear. We don't, you know, there wasn't a lot of exit polling here, and a lot of those assumptions about the gender divide and even the Trump's inroads with minority voters is based off of exit polling or from states that just provide more data about their voters on the night of an election.
On the gender divide issue, I'll just point out that Hillary Clinton actually only won, I think, 48% of the vote back in 2016, whereas Kamala Harris won 52% of the vote here in Maine. So. And we have a history of women senators. We have a woman governor. So I think here in Maine, maybe that gender divide is not as big of a deal as it is in other states. But that's, again, speculation.
All right. Well, such an interesting conversation. We're speaking with our Political Pulse team about Maine's election results. If you'd like to join us, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, if you're quick, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about the results of the election in Maine. With me, Kevin Miller, Maine Public's State House correspondent, and Steve Missler, Maine Public's chief political correspondent and State House bureau chief. We understand that President Biden is in the Rose Garden and is approaching the podium, going to give an address to the nation. So in just a moment, we're going to cut away to NPR programming so that we can listen to that. If it's brief, we'll come back and continue our discussion with Steve and Kevin.
For over 200 years, America has carried on the greatest experiment in self-government in the history of the world. And that's not hyperbole, that's a fact. We're the people. The people vote and choose their own leaders, and they do it peacefully. And we're in a democracy, the will of the people always prevails. Yesterday, I spoke with President-elect Trump to congratulate him on his victory. And I assured him that I'd direct my entire administration to work with his team to ensure a peaceful and orderly transition. That's what the American people deserve. Yesterday, I also spoke with Vice President Harris. She's been a partner and a public servant. She ran an inspiring campaign, and everyone got to see something that I learned early on to respect so much, her character. She has a backbone like a ramrod. She has great character, true character. She gave her whole heart and effort, and she and her entire team should be proud of the campaign they ran. You know, the struggle for the soul of America, since our very founding, has always been an ongoing debate and still vital today. I know for some people, it's a time for victory, to state the obvious. For others, it's a time of loss. Campaigns are contests of competing visions. The country chooses one or the other. We accept the choice the country made. I've said many times, you can't love your country only when you win. You can't love your neighbor only when you agree. Something I hope we can do, no matter who you voted for, is see each other not as adversaries, but as fellow Americans. Bring down the temperature. I also hope we can lay to rest the question about the integrity of the American electoral system. It is honest, it is fair, and it is transparent. And it can be trusted, win or lose. I also hope we can restore the respect for all our election workers who busted their necks and took risks at the outset. We should thank them. Thank them for staffing voting sites, counting the votes, and protecting the very integrity of the election. Many of them are volunteers who do it simply out of love for their country. And as they did their duty as citizens, I will do my duty as president. I'll fulfill my oath. And I will honor the Constitution. On January 20th, we'll have a peaceful transfer of power here in America. To all our incredible staff, supporters, cabinet members, all the people who have been hanging out with me for the last 4 years, God love you, as my mother would say, thank you so much. You put so much into the past 4 years. I know it's a difficult time. You're hurting. I hear you and I see you. But don't forget. Don't forget all that we accomplished. It's been a historic presidency. Not because I'm president, because what we've done, what you've done. A presidency for all Americans. Much of the work we've done is already being felt by the American people, but the vast majority of it will not be felt, be felt over the next 10 years. We have a, we have legislation we passed that's just only now just really kicking in. We're going to see over $1 trillion worth of infrastructure work done, changing people's lives in rural communities and communities that are in real difficulty, because it takes time to get it done. And so much more, it's going to take time. But it's there. The road ahead is clear, assuming we sustain it. There's so much we can get done and will get done based on the way the legislation was passed. And it's truly historic. You know, we're leaving behind the strongest economy in the world. I know people are still hurting, but things are changing rapidly. Together, we've changed America for the better. Now we have 74 days to finish the term, our term. Let's make every day count. That's the responsibility we have to the American people. Look, folks, you all know it. Lives. Setbacks are unavoidable, but giving up is unforgivable. Setbacks are unavoidable, but giving up is unforgivable. We all get knocked down, but the measure of our character, as my dad would say, is how quickly we get back up. Remember, a defeat does not mean we are defeated. We lost this battle. The America of your dreams is calling for you to get back up. That's the story of America for over 240 years and counting. It's a story for all of us, not just some of us. The American experiment endures. We're going to be okay, but we need to stay engaged. We need to keep going. And above all, we need to keep the faith. I'm so proud to have worked with all of you. I really mean it. I sincerely mean it. God bless you all. God bless America. And may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You are listening to live coverage from NPR's Morning Edition.
President Biden, that was President Biden addressing the nation from the Rose Garden at the White House. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're returning to Maine Calling now in our discussion with our Political Pulse team, Kevin Miller and Steve Missler. Before we go back to talking about Maine politics, Kevin, what's your what are your first thoughts on what the president just now had to say?
Well, I guess my first thought would be what a difference 4 years makes as far as the tone of what's going on. Obviously, 4 years ago, the election was much closer. This time it was very clear Donald Trump won. But, you know, obviously President Biden was making the point of peaceful transfer of power. You know, it's just the reality that Trump won this case. You know, and I thought it was interesting some of his rhetoric in there, which is obviously aimed at, or not rhetoric, is the way he phrased things, aimed at Democratic voters, saying, you know, we're defeated. Just because you are defeated doesn't mean you are defeated. One defeat doesn't mean you're defeated. And, you know, we're going to be okay. We need to stay engaged. And obviously he's sending a message to, I think there's a lot of concern out there among Democrats about what happens now. And it's such a big difference, not only compared to 4 years ago, but 8 years ago, the response to Donald Trump when he won the first time. There was instant mobilization of, you know, of Democrats and progressives about responding to it. And it seems like people are kind of more on their back foot this time, trying to figure out how to proceed. So it sounds like he was sending that message to his supporters.
Steve, do you have thoughts?
Yeah, I think Kevin did a great job of encapsulating my own thoughts. You know, I think what was striking was obviously him, you know, assuring the American public that there will be a peaceful transfer of power. That was not the case in 2020. So I think he's trying to draw a contrast there between what happened then and the way it will happen this time. And he even used this quote that he had used when he was the candidate before he withdrew from the race, which is that you can't love your country only when you win. And I think that that's to reprise that here, I think is obviously very intentional and aimed at a certain part of the electorate. You know, the other thing too, as Kevin pointed out, I think he is trying to just make sure that Democrats who are despondent about this loss, which is devastating for Democrats, and you're seeing that all over the place, that they respond to that maybe not quite with the same fervor as they did in 2016 when Trump eked out a victory. But, you know, just to make sure they stay engaged, because I think that, you know, and I hear this sometimes just from voters or just people that I'm associated with, that it would be a lot easier for people who supported Vice President Harris in a different direction for the country to sort of just resign yourselves to defeat and not do anything and not fight what will be a very difficult time for Democrats beginning in January, but to stay active and engaged. And I think, you know, that part of his message was obviously very much aimed at the Democrats who were pretty disappointed about Tuesday's result.
I want to go back to state, what we're talking about today, which is the state election results. What we haven't talked about yet are the referendum question, the bond issues. We did talk about question one, but they all passed. And Kevin, that's not unusual for Maine to have bond issues passed. Some were close. The historic restoration bond measure, 51% to 49%. Thoughts about the bond measures?
Yeah, the bond measures typically do fairly well in Maine. We've only seen a handful that have not passed in the past couple of decades even. Yeah, you're right. Some of them were close, but in the end, they eked out. I think the historic renovation one was an interesting one because you're talking about these are bonds or grants that would be given to groups or governments that want to restore historic buildings that they own. This isn't going to homeowners who want to restore their old house. So there may not have been much support or as much support there. Certainly the trail bond did really well. Obviously, Mainers seem to really like their trails. So you know, not a big surprise on the bond issues.
Steve?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I actually on election night, I actually thought the historic preservation bond was going down. It did not look good early, so it rallied, I guess. In the late returns, I actually came into this thinking it had failed. So thanks, Kevin. But the other ones are, as Kevin pointed out, are not a surprise. Mainers traditionally support borrowing for certain things. Transportation, although that was not on the ballot this year, has been one that always wins because people don't like driving on bad roads. And so That those generally fare pretty well. But so does our research and development, which was on the ballot this year. And of course, the Trails Bond, which I don't know, that seems right in Maine's wheelhouse, if you ask me. So I'm not surprised that that passed.
All right.
It does look like the, I was just going to add one thing. I'm not sure actually AP has called the question three issue of the historic reservation, restoration of buildings. But it looks like it has a pretty comfortable lead. So even if they haven't called it, it'd be highly unlikely that it'd be the outcome would change.
You know, I wanted to circle back to something about talking about trends and regions of the country and Maine being how Maine is similar or different than the nation as a whole. I wanted to note, Steve, that one of our guests yesterday on the program made a note, and this was sustained yesterday at the ballot box, that the only Republican representing New England in the House or Senate, in the U.S. House or Senate, is Susan Collins, that every other New England state, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Connecticut, Rhode Island, all Democrats, New England, an outlier in the nation today.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to something we talked about before President Biden came on for his address, which is the split ticket issue. I mean, there's just a lot of split ticket voters in this state there. And again, that bucks a trend that we're seeing in other states, which is more towards deep partisanship all the way down the ballot. That's just not the case here. And I think that's also maybe one of the reasons why Democrats were able to hold on to or looks like they'll be able to hold on to the legislature, too. I think, you know, both it's at that split ticket proclivity, if you will, extends from congressional seats all the way down to legislative races. And I think that just speaks to Maine's sort of, it's just partisanship is just not quite that baked in here. I mean, it definitely seems to be getting worse in the legislature, I've noticed over the years just since I've been covering it. But generally speaking, I think there's still a willingness to cross the proverbial aisle, if you will. And in case for voters, that means maybe voting for a Democrat for a legislative seat and then voting for a Republican in a congressional seat.
All right. We're going to go to Ephraim calling from Portland. Hi, Ephraim. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if your speakers were just saying that, you know, as Democrats, if you are of that persuasion, that you there's a lot of work to do to make sure that things are being held accountable and things like that. And I think Kamala made a similar point in her speech yesterday. But I was wondering if they could maybe talk about what specifically that looks like. What exactly is the work? You know, staying vigilant is great, but like what specifically should we be like actively doing?
All right. Well, Kevin, I know that you're not in a role to be an advocate, but at the State House, when someone is getting involved, what does that look like?
Yeah, certainly I'm not going to tell the Democratic Party what they should or shouldn't do at this point. But activism comes on all different types of levels. You know, we certainly do see a lot of activism here at the State House as far as organizing around specific issues. I do think that in this case, the caller's question, I don't think folks know exactly how they're going to respond at this point. So that's a big question. And I think there's a lot of soul searching that's going on in the Democratic Party, whether that's going to be big mass rallies like we saw 8 years ago. Those haven't been organized so far. I did, you know, see a text message that went out yesterday because I, like a lot of voters, I get text messages from campaigns, and it said, today is a day to grieve. Tomorrow, join a call with people across the country to decide how to take action. So there's just this conversation happening right now, I think, across the country among Democrats, much like there was 4 years ago among Republicans how to respond.
Ephraim, thank you for calling in. And if you want to call in our phone number, we welcome you to do so. I'm especially interested in what you think about state and local races. Did something happen in your community that you think is really important? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email if you're quick, talk@mainepublic.org, or find us on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, the candidates and issues on the ballot in Maine and what the impacts of this election will be. Joining me, Steve Missler and Kevin Miller, who are Maine Public's political pulse team. What are your thoughts about the results here in Maine? Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Find us on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Steve, I'm interested in something that Governor Mills said the other day, and I may be paraphrasing it, but saying that she would be willing to work with Donald Trump if he is willing to help Maine. And I'm wondering, from her office, and as she looks at the change in the presidential administration, what could the impacts on Maine be? What ways could a change in federal policy change what we are doing here on the ground?
Well, I could think of one right off the top of the head, which is renewable energy policy, which Governor Mills has pursued with some vigor since she's been in office for almost 6 years now. And, you know, President-elect Trump is essentially called for an end to offshore wind development. And I think that could be a flashpoint between his incoming administration and the governor's priorities, because obviously she's invested a lot of time and energy into developing offshore wind array in the Gulf of Maine, and having Maine be, and even to the point where even they've proposed building this big facility in Sears Island that would be used to help construct what the materials for that array, and, you know, getting them out into the Gulf of Maine. But, you know, President-elect Trump has basically vowed to end offshore wind. He thinks it's terrible and not good. And I think, you know, that could be one potential place where she would be at odds with the Trump administration. And, you know, I think that project faces other hurdles beyond political ones. But that's one off the top of my head. There could be other conflicts. And there may be even times where they're on the same page, especially if it comes down to something like infrastructure development. I think everybody wants that and supports that. And if the President-elect Trump tries to go that route, he did try during his first term from 2016 to 2020, talked a lot about infrastructure, but never got anything over the finish line. Democratic-controlled Congress and President Biden finally did that. And you actually heard him reference that in his speech a few moments ago, basically saying, look, we've made all these investments, but you're just not seeing them yet, you know, but that takes time. So some of those projects will be coming online when Trump is president. So, but if he decides to do more than that, I would imagine that he would have a willing partner in the Mills administration.
Steve, what would you like to add to that? What can a change in the president mean for Maine?
Well, I think that Steve probably hit the nail on the head for the biggest potential change involving renewable energy. There are certainly areas where Governor Mills disagrees with President Trump, has disagreed with him. I think immigration, that's a big question. Obviously, President-elect Trump is talking about doing mass deportations of folks who've come here either through the asylum process. Realistically, I don't think anybody really expects that to happen. If there were mass deportations, that would have a pretty big impact on our economy, because a lot of these folks are working important jobs that can't be filled otherwise. Governor Mills has been fairly welcoming of the asylum seekers and the migrants we've seen come to the state. And this has been an issue that she's had to confront with Republicans. Republicans have been very critical of the administration's willingness to support some of the asylum seekers and migrants that are coming here, providing them with housing and things like that. So is that going to change now with the Trump administration in place? Probably not. But if there's certainly efforts to restrict access, folks that are coming across the border, we might see less migrants. But again, a lot of these folks are filling jobs that are otherwise very difficult to fill here in Maine. And there is definitely, if you talk to any businesses here in Maine, are not saying that there is a glut of workers. There's a shortage of workers, and these are folks who are filling jobs that can't oftentimes be filled otherwise.
Yeah, Kevin, as you said that, I thought about a time my mom was in a rehab center and almost every single person caring for her was an immigrant from another country. A message here from Bill, and well, I'll take this as it is. Bill writes, why is it that Maine is so ingrained in leftist movements? So, Steve, I'll sort of change that question a little bit to why is Maine an outlier in terms of this voting for Democrats when the rest of the country seems to be shifting Republican?
Well, it's a tough question. I mean, I think there's a lot of answers to it, I think. One is, I think, the fact that Democrats lead in voter registration. They are the top voter registrants in the state. That's been a big change, as we've talked about previously in the program. I mean, for as long as I've been covering Maine politics, it was always independents or unenrolled voters that led that list, and Republicans and Democrats always vied for second or third. Now Democrats are at the top, and then independents, and then Republicans. Do I have that right, Kevin? I've forgotten already, but I wouldn't be surprised if that changes over time. I mean, we've seen nationally, there's a lot of disaffection with both political parties, and that actually more people are unenrolling and becoming independents nationwide. That trend has not reached Maine yet, but I would not be surprised if it happens. But until it does, and you know, until Republicans make a more robust case that their vision, whether it's in the legislature or on the local level, is the one that people should support, it may remain that way. I'm not sure if that gets at the emailer's question, but it's the best stat that I have.
Yeah, and I would just kind of add to that. I mean, like Steve talked about earlier, Republicans did make gains in the state house. And so Democrats are going to have a much narrower majority this time around. And these are not monolithic parties, as much as we'd like to think of them as monolithic. You know, just because you're a Democrat does not mean you are automatically going to vote one way on guns, especially on issues like guns and some of these social issues. So when you shrink that majority, a lot of the people that are in the middle arguably have more influence on both sides of the aisle. So, you know, as far as legislative process, I think it's going to be harder for the Democrats to get things done. It's going to be harder for the Mills administration to get things done this time around with the smaller majorities. So we'll see kind of where things shake out on some of these big hot button issues.
Yeah, I'm glad Kevin pointed that out, because I was just going to say that, you know, just because Democrats have an edge in the House and Senate and the legislature doesn't mean they're going to be pushing the same sort of progressive policies that they attempted to do in the previous 6 years. They may not be able to do that this time. There may be Democrats that are in swing district seats that can't vote for those things this time around. So, you know, I think the Republican gains, while they don't appear to be enough to, you know, take control of a chamber, that doesn't mean that there would be no Republican influence and policy that comes out of this place. And I think that's just the reality of the political dynamic that will exist if these numbers that we're looking at right now hold.
And you say comes out of this place as you're sitting in the basement of the state office building. Let's see, an email here from Mimi. I'm interested in what your panelists think about Maine's ranked choice voting for president. I wish all states took this approach. You know, again, I know you all aren't going to tell us an opinion on it, but Kevin, the reality is it really hasn't played a factor, has it?
No, it hasn't played a factor yet. It could have come into effect this year with so many other third-party candidates who are on the ballot, but it hasn't, just because I think people were so committed to voting either for Trump or for Harris, and they didn't want to consider any others. That's not to say that it won't come up in the future. I think it's very likely that we would potentially have a ranked choice runoff here in Maine, and that would get a lot of attention. But, you know, we're still one of the few states that has this. And Steve and I were talking earlier about how they're seeing some changes in other states. I think Steve could probably talk about what's going on in Alaska and how they are taking a somewhat different approach to ranked choice voting.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think ranked choice voting has actually had some difficulty getting a foothold in a lot of other states, Maine being an exception, and Alaska. And Kevin and I were talking about this before the program, because we were talking about blue dog Democrats, meaning moderate Democrats like Jared Golden in the 2nd Congressional District, and how some of them are in trouble. after this election. I'm speaking specifically of Mary Peltola, who's actually part of the Blue Dog Coalition that Jared Golden helps lead. And she's like trailing right now, but she could end up getting lifted over the finish line because they have ranked choice voting in that state, but not, maybe not for long, because at this very, on the same Alaskan ballot this year, there was an appeal, a referendum question that would repeal ranked choice voting in that state. And it looked, at this moment, it's leading. The repeal effort is leading. So it'll be in place for this election, but it may not be for the any future ones. And I think there's been a concerted Republican campaign against ranked choice voting across the country. That may have been be one of the reasons why it's not taking hold in other states quite the way it did here. I mean, I think the Republican opposition to ranked choice voting was a little bit late to the game in Maine, and that may be one of the reasons why we actually have it. But in other states, it's just, it's not faring well. I think people who oppose it have made a pretty they've been very persuasive and convincing voters that it takes too long or it's complicated. So I think Mainers seem to like it okay, and maybe that's one of the reasons why we don't have a repeal effort quite yet here. But in other states, it's just not, you know, there's definitely a lot of resistance to it.
We'll go to John, who's calling from Portland. Hi, John, go ahead.
Hi there. I've been listening, and it seems the question was asked a couple of times about why it is that Maine seems to be against the trend and turning more Democratic. And I would say that there are still a lot of people who would be traditional Republicans, but they're not buying what Donald Trump is selling, which isn't really ordinary Republicanism. And if we move beyond the era of the Donald Trump approach, I imagine that many of those traditional Republicans, fiscal conservatives, people who believe that government should be as small as it can be to get the job done, they would reemerge in Maine, and the trend would go the other way. And I'm happy that the state is not one that goes along with what Donald Trump is selling, which I could summarize, but it would take too long.
Well, John, I think that's a really terrific analysis. Kevin.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think, you know, Maine has a history of voting for people who are in the middle from both parties. And we see that now with our congressional delegation. We have Senator Collins, one of the most moderate Republicans. Same thing with Jared Golden. Angus King, fairly centrist, you know, leans left, but fairly centrist on other issues. Shelley Pingree being the outliner. She is a progressive, and she kind of calls herself she's a member of the Progressive Caucus down there. So I thought it was interesting. You know, it would have been interesting had Donald Trump not wrapped up the GOP primary right before. He essentially had wrapped it up by the time we got to the main primary. Nikki Haley did pretty well. She probably would have been done better, I would think, if it wasn't clear that Donald Trump was going to win. So I think he's right in that respect. There are still a lot of Republicans that don't support the Trump version of Republicanism. But right now, the party in the state definitely does. And obviously, from what we saw the voting results, there's still a lot of voters out there who do support him.
I'll just add real quick that the like question, I think the caller had very astute observations, but my only question is does the Republican Party return from the Trump vision that it currently is embraced? I mean, can it, is the question that I have, meaning would it go back to its roots as more of a fiscally conservative, you know, small government party, which is what it has been for decades. Can it go back there, or is there a permanent realignment in this Trump coalition that he helped assemble to win on election day?
John, thanks for your call. I'm going to take a chance to go to one more call. Bruce in Damariscotta, can you talk really quickly? We're tight on time.
Right. My family includes a trans child. We have lots of LGBTQ friends and also people who are concerned about the risk that Trump's election may be the last free election we have. What can the state of Maine do to protect us against unconstitutional actions, which a lot of people fear are going to become, including mass deportation? Can we protect the immigrant community here in Maine?
Bruce, a big question with just a little bit of time left. Kevin, I'm going to toss it to you.
Yeah, that's a really big question. I mean, that's the value of having states, right? States' rights. States can still resist, you know, can take a different policy approach than the federal government does. And I think we'll certainly see that. I don't expect to see the Mills administration or Democrats backing away from the protections for LGBTQ communities here, similar on immigration issues. So I don't think you'll see a lot of change in that respect here in Maine.
Bruce, thanks for your call, and thank you to everyone who participated in today's program, and to our Political Pulse team, Kevin Miller, who's Maine Public State House correspondent, and Steve Missler, Maine Public Chief Political Correspondent and Bureau Chief. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue, and we had help from John Keimel. Tomorrow on the program, our popular annual Made in Maine Holiday Gift Guide. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.